Thanks for tuning in to Christian Devotion Speak Up, the show where Christian leaders come on and share their saving knowledge of Jesus Christ and how He brought them to serve the kingdom in a big way. I'm your host, Scott McCausey, and I welcome you to stick around and hang out with us. We've got a great show planned just for you. So for the next 60 minutes, turn off the television, turn up your computer speakers, and get ready to learn about Christ through our guest testimony and our ministry. This is Christian Devotion. Speak up!
Welcome to Speak Up, the Sword of Sports Edition. You know, I often banter with the co-founders of the ministry that sometimes we should call this the Speak Up Sports Show because we are fans. We're fans of sports one way or another. You know, we talk about hoops, and we're all from different parts of the country. So usually at the beginning, we do a little bantering about that. But tonight, my guest is the former West Michigan University Bronco quarterback who broke all sorts of school records through his senior year in 2009. Then he went on to the NFL with a few different teams, including the Indianapolis Colts, where he played understudy to Peyton Manning. He's also a key contributing author to TheologyMix.com, the ministry that's picked up this show. His name is Tim Hiller, and he'll be joining to share his football trials and victories, as well as the victories of Jesus Christ in his life. So if you've got a football buddy who might be encouraged through a powerful testimony, you know, take this link, pass it along, and also this thing can be heard 24/7 at ChristianDevotionsSpeakUp.com. So I hope you can do that and take advantage of this and use it as a tool. Well, with that being said, it's a perfect lead-in to bring Tim Hiller in. So let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We come back, we'll have Tim Hiller with a full interview. This is Scott McCausey with Christian Devotion. Speak up.
Mercy Roller knows her name is a lie. There's never been any mercy in her young life. Raised by a twisted and abusive father who called himself the pastor, she was abandoned by the church community that should have stood together to protect her from his evil. Her mother, consumed by her own fear and hate, won't stand her ground to save Mercy either. The pastor has robbed Mercy of innocence and love, a husband, and her child. Not a single person seems capable of standing up to the pastor's unrestrained evil, so Mercy takes matters into her own hands. Her heart was hardened to love long before she took on the role of judge, jury, and executioner of the pastor. She just didn't realize the retribution she thought would save her might turn her into the very thing she hated most. Sent away by her angry and grieving mother, Mercy's path is unclear until she meets a young preacher headed to counsel a pregnant couple. Sure that her calling is to protect the family, Mercy is drawn into a different life on the other side of the mountain where she slowly discovers true righteousness has nothing evil about it, and that there might be room for her own stained and shattered soul to find shelter and even love. Mercy's Reign is a remarkable historical novel set in the 19th century Appalachia that traces the thorny path from bitterness to forgiveness and reveals the victory and strength that comes from simple faith. Published in December of 2014 by Kriegel Publications, Cindy Sproles brings us Mercy's Reign.
And we're back live, and I've got Tim Hiller. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you, and I love bringing in athletes, Tim, as I believe they have some of the biggest opportunities to make a difference for God's kingdom through examples and platform. But it's got to start somewhere. So let's start at the beginning of your life. Tim, share about growing up. Was this a Christ-loving home? Did you have brothers and sisters? Share about that.
Yeah, definitely. No, I grew up in a small town in northeast Ohio near the Akron-Canton area called Oroville, and pretty much known for two things. It's the world headquarters of, you know, the J.M. Smucker Company, so think of us in the morning when you have your toast, and as well as the hometown of Bobby Knight, legendary head basketball coach at Indiana. And so growing up in that town really was a sports town and a town that loves its schools. It's a well-supported community that really put kids first, and really a town filled with a lot of diversity and above all, Christian values. And so I was fortunate to be raised in a home where church going and faith were front and center and were core to our lives. A lot of my family is Catholic, and my parents were raised in that faith, but went away and were married in the Methodist church. And so we were raised in the Methodist faith. And it was a part of our upbringing, but, you know, for the longest part of my life, and we'll get into this as our time together unfolds, it really was a journey that my parents' faith was kind of my faith. And so I had to kind of come through different adversities and trials in my own life to accept that as my own and to really understand the true meaning of the gospel.
Amen. And we are going to get there, but like I said, I've got all kinds of fun things to talk about as well. And some of my biggest memories as a boy growing up at our home in the outskirts of nowhere here in Michigan was playing baseball and football with my only brother, and it's really hard to play football one-on-one. So here's what we would do. We'd set up landmarks in our yard as receivers. So, you know, the teeter-totter was Jerry Rice and the lawn chair was Tom Rathman, and we'd pretend we were, you know, the quarterbacks, and if we hit an object, it was a completion. We'd do that for hours. Now, Tim, I know based on your bio that you did some of that kind of thing too. Tell us about chasing dreams as a kid.
Most definitely. I think, you know, my favorite reading literature was Sports Illustrated for Kids magazine and cutting out those pictures and making homemade posters and whatnot. And we actually had, you know, your backyard reference hits home. We had two trees in the corners of the yard, and those acted both as sideline and goal line, if you can picture that, on either corner of the field. And
yeah.
So, oh, sure, we, you know, the old JCPenney catalogs, those are our Halloween costumes. You know, they used to carry every team in the NFL, every franchise. So, had a few of those, and, you know, they say that they have that label on the inside that they're not fit for contact, and we pretty much ignored that and played in them anyway. So definitely a lot of memories growing up dodging imaginary guys in the backyard for sure.
Now, did you say you had brothers and sisters growing up as well?
I do. I have a younger sibling. He's about 4 years younger than me. Lives in Columbus, Ohio currently, and he was a baseball player, but he frequented our backyard games as well. So we did a little bit of everything together.
Okay, very good, very good. Now, you also have a sports legacy. I know your grandpa was all Big Ten center for Illinois for the 1952 Rose Bowl champions. Tell us about your grandpa and what his legacy means to you.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, he's really, truly the leader of our family in a lot of ways, and he was someone that I was the first grandchild on my mom's side, and so we really have a special bond, and he and I have had a deep relationship for a number of years, and he was never one to push me towards football or to, you know, enforce his passions upon me, but he was someone that I naturally gravitated to and admired, and he always encouraged whatever it was all his grandchildren pursued and were passionate about. But for me, there was just that natural affinity to football, and remember, you know, he was number 55 and wearing this Illinois jersey around that had that number, and watching some of his old black and white film, and you know, in the basement at my parents' house, we have this shadow box of his that has his old jersey and his Rose Bowl ring and his you know, Illinois letter and different things. So it's really a special thing to our family, and something that really for me was a standard I pursued and always have admired him, and I just want to honor him.
Yeah. You know, that's really cool. And my dad and I have kind of that sports relationship going on, and we'll get together and we'll watch. And I was a baseball guy growing up. I loved it. I played football too, but I was much better at baseball. So we would watch games together and we would analyze what's going on. I could just envision, Tim, you doing that with your family and with your grandpa. Did you guys sit down, look at film, maybe even like in high school, and watch what you did? And maybe grandpa said, hey, you know, maybe if you did this or you did that, did that kind of thing go on?
You know, sometimes he's not one to do that. I mean, he would be at the majority of games. He was at a lot of my high school games, certainly the majority of my college games. They watched on TV when they weren't able to make it. And we did watch some football together. I think the biggest running thing we had going was growing up in Ohio. Naturally, I rooted for the Buckeyes. It's kind of every boy's dream growing up. And so him, you know, being an alum of Illinois, we always had a little wager, usually an ice cream cone or something like that, on the Ohio State-Illinois game every year. We'd watch that together. So that was kind of a favorite pastime.
Very, very cool. I'm going to let you slide on, you know, talking about the Buckeyes here as a Michigander guy here that roots for the Spartans and the Wolverines. But, you know, we'll overlook that, and we're going to move right on and talking about high school in Oroville, where, again, you played football for, I believe, the Red Raiders, if my research indicated correct. And like I mentioned, I played 4 years of high school here in Michigan. I loved it. However, it's easy, Tim, to get caught up in all the hubbub surrounding the sport, you know. I didn't know Christ at the time, which caused some issues for me. Did you have Christ in your life, and how did that balance football, prioritizing Jesus even over the sport that you loved, or, you know, maybe did that come later?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. For me, if you would have asked me when I was 16, 17, 18 years old, I would have told you I was a Christian, but the reality is that I wasn't. I thought I was, and I thought I understood that. But hindsight, looking back, I didn't come to Christ until 2007 when I really understood Christ's sacrifice on the cross and understood the true depth and meaning of my sin and my need for his grace. And so at those times, I would have told you I was a believer. And, part of being the oldest child and part of, I'm a pretty disciplined, routine-oriented person in my life in general, very goal-driven, and I know what I want. And, I tended to do the right things in a worldly sense because of that. And so for me, working hard, doing the right things, discipline, saying the right things, striving to be a leader, making good decisions, surrounding myself with good people were things that I did, but they weren't necessarily driven by a saving faith in Jesus Christ. And so for me, it was hard later to make that transition to understand that I'm not as good a person as I think I am. And what does that really mean? And so at the time, it was a struggle at times, I think. And it was really more of an ego thing. When you're that age, people, see potential in you. And, with that comes hearing the message over and over that, you've got potential, you're pretty good at this and things. It can do some bad things with your ego. And so, pride, I think, is something that is a continual battle for men in general, but especially a male athlete. And so, those were definitely some of the battles that I encountered at that age.
Like you mentioned, pride and ego, those things are in all sorts and all parts of life, even in the workplace. I think it can be a good trade-off to have a lot of pride in your work and that you are goal-driven and you're working hard to achieve something. But then there's a level of taking that pride too far where you get this giant ego and put yourself on a pedestal, and it becomes difficult, especially when you're young. You don't have an understanding of who Christ is. Tim, there might be a parent out there, or maybe even a player that's in the high school, sports setting that might be listening. What kind of advice would you give that person in regards to, staying driven to the things that are very, very important? I know you're also very smart. We're going to talk about, studies as well and the importance of that. But like I mentioned, in high school, lots of things take place. There's parties that the guys go to, the gatherings that the players go to, there's some horseplay that can take place, and there's probably some guys out there right now that could really learn from some advice that you might be able to lend. What would you say to that player?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. One thing that, and we'll talk later about next level performance and some of the speaking and different things that we do, but
sure,
when we get in front of an audience with next level, one of the things we talk about is the funnel of purpose. And if you can picture that visual of a funnel and the way it narrows and kind of that narrow neck at the bottom, a funnel's purpose. I used to see my dad in the garage all the time when we were growing up and we were younger kids, he'd always change the oil in our vehicles in the garage, and that he'd use that funnel. And the reason was so that oil didn't get, in places in the engine where it wasn't meant to be. A funnel's designed to guide and channel us towards something. And so we pose that question to student athletes and say, what's your funnel? What is that one thing you want more than anything else that is that guiding channel, that focus area of your life that you run every single decision through? I can consider going to that gathering or that party that you referenced, but is that going to help me if my purpose, my funnel, that goal that I'm pursuing is to be an all-state player or to, go and play the game beyond high school or whatever that purpose is? Is that party, is the people there and the decisions that are made, is that going to help me achieve my ultimate goal? And if it isn't, it comes into my funnel, but it doesn't go through and I don't execute on that decision. And so we try to use that visual, and we have some things that go with it to really present to student athletes that you have a purpose, and what is that? And, if we're fortunate enough to be in a setting where we can say it explicitly, that funnel, that purpose in our lives that fuels us is Jesus Christ. Colossians 3:23 reminds us that whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as though serving the Lord and not men. And I think what's important to realize in your life, especially when you're an athlete, but this is life in general, is that, I think about my own opportunity to play professionally with the Indianapolis Colts. That was not something I did on my own. I mean, you think about all the hard work that coaches invested in your life. I mean, you are the product of their work and their effort and what they taught you. You think about all the good or bad breaks that you had. I mean, how many times you avoided injury and how many times you were fortunate enough to, the ball bounced the right way that you got to play, or you know, you're fortunate enough to be seen by the right scout at the right place at the right time that the right team decided to give you an opportunity. I mean, there is no self-made man. And so I would encourage athletes and adults of all ages to think about the fact that there are many people whose shoulders you stand upon that are responsible for where you are, and it's not ultimately yourself. I think there's very little in our life that we actually are responsible for or in control of, and we know that there's a higher authority in God's perfect will and plan that guides our lives, but we stand on the shoulders of teachers and coaches and pastors and friends and parents that invested in our life. So I think when you look through life through that funnel of purpose, as well as through the fact that a lot of people's investment is the reason that I am where I am in any situation in life, it creates humility in us, and it's something that we need to remind ourselves of.
You know, there's another aspect, too, as you were talking that got me to thinking, because football is a team sport. You know, the quarterback can throw the pass and call some plays from the sidelines that come in from coaches that are obviously mentoring and helping, but there's also the line of scrimmage on defense. Everybody has to do their part, because if they don't, you know, the one superstar linebacker cannot run 100 yards to the other side of the field to make the tackle every play. So there's also this aspect of unity within the relationships or our spheres of influence. Like you said, even being protected from injury by people that were on the front line. You know, I watched some videos, Tim. We're going to move talking about college here in a second. I watched some videos of you and some highlights. There were some times you had, like, all day to throw that ball. I mean, you had some guys up front that were protecting you. You know, it's important for we who are believers in Christ, when we go to church and we go to these group settings, that we do encourage each other in love so that we can be equipped with the gifts God gives us and encourage one another who also have those special gifts that God gave them as well. Would you say that's accurate?
Oh, amen. I mean, I think, you know, Galatians 6:2 reminds us that, you know, share one another's burdens, and in this way you fulfill the law of Christ. I mean, we are not to live this life alone. We're not to live it in isolation. We're to live it in community. And I would say that community should be both with believers and non-believers. I think that we are all placed in different, as you mentioned, spheres of influence or different, what I would say, mission fields. That ministry happens everywhere. I mean, it can happen in corporate America as easily as it can happen in a locker room, as easily as it can happen in church ministry. And so ministry happens everywhere. And if we look at our overarching purpose and mission, as you referenced, to share the good news with others, to serve and not be served, and to lead from that position, we have great opportunity to make a difference for the kingdom and impact other people's lives.
Amen. I got to tell you, I love sports. It's probably come across already. You know, I love my time playing with friends and competing in competitive levels and situations. Probably to a point, though, that it was an idol in my life in many different ways. You know, I collected baseball cards. I studied stats. I watched it. I played it. And I've always believed that sports can be a very good thing. You know, building character, camaraderie, teaching diligence, goal setting. But I often look back at my life in my time growing up and wish I would have been all in with Jesus through that entire process. Tell me your thoughts on this. And has sports ever become a bit of an idol for you?
Oh, certainly. I mean, sports are an idol for our society and our world. And, you know, I would use this example, and I share this a lot with student athletes and different groups that I speak with, is that, you know, You pick up any inanimate object, you know, it could be just a simple pen, right? With that pen, I can write you a wonderful letter, a thank you note, or something that you'll cherish and remember. And I can do great good with that pen, but I could also take that pen and stab you with it or throw it at you, right? And do evil with that pen. And anything in our hands can be used for good or evil, and that can be social media. Certainly, that's a big one that we address a lot of times with teenagers and student athletes. It can be a way to edify and uplift and encourage other people, and it can also be a way to destroy and tear down. And sports, unfortunately, is the same thing. It can be used to gratify the self, to gain more, you know, ego and power and fame and money. And not that those things are inherently evil in and of themselves, but it's about how we use them. But it can also be used for great good. And I believe that the calling in my life in many different circumstances, both as a player and now after my career, has been to simply use whatever platform of influence God has given me through football, because the reality is I wouldn't be, you know, even here speaking with you tonight, Scott, if it weren't for playing the game and being an athlete. And we can use these platforms because people are fascinated with sport because they're listening, because they you know, cherish athletes and put them, as you said, on a pedestal or a platform, they're watching and listening. So therefore, what are we saying and what are we doing and how can we use that to impact people's lives for the better? And so that's really what I get passionate about that, and that's really something that, that we're trying to train student-athletes through our work at Next Level Performance to do now, is that if we can, you know, most athletes are not going to go on to college and play. And so during their middle school and high school years, if we can take them where they're passionate, play in the sports they love, and train them to use that time well to develop those lessons of leadership and character and hard work and teamwork and service and making a difference through the game, that when they go on to college, to the working world, to be a, you know, a parent, a husband, a father, a mother, et cetera, and other roles in their life, they will be better equipped than other people because they were an athlete, because they learned these lessons. So, you know, it sounds a little arrogant, but I know that on a daily basis, I'm at a competitive advantage because of the lessons I've learned and the experiences I've had as an athlete. And so I view it as my role to be a good steward of that and to seek to share that with other people and to use it as a platform to make a positive difference and to share my faith.
Yes, yes. So from high school, here you are, a player, setting all sorts of school records, but your senior year you get injured. College is within your grasp, and I'm sure you were recruited to play football for different universities, but, you know, this injury kind of changed some things. How did this affect you? Where were you in this time in your mindset in taking this next step in life?
Yeah, no, it was, the recruiting process is an interesting beast in and of itself. And so my personal experience was, you know, I came into my senior year in high school and really looked like I would have a plethora of options. And going into the first round of the playoffs, suffered that injury you referenced, was a broken collarbone my senior year. And I was in a position where I was on a lot of people's, you know, recruiting boards or radars. I was kind of anywhere from second to fourth. I wasn't, you know, their top guy per se, but I wasn't, you know, the seventh or eighth guy either. I was kind of somewhere in the middle. And what looked like a lot of options, and there were some options on the table, when the injury happened, they pretty much dissipated. And so the story is pretty neat. We prayed throughout that process, my parents and I, for God's clarity. And we really said, you know, it looks like there's going to be a lot of options. Lord, just simply give us clarity. Show us your will. And it was really interesting. It was one of the first times I really saw his hand moving in my life. And it was December 13th, which is my birthday, and it was my 18th birthday. And at that point in time, with signing day, you know, 6 weeks away, I had no offers. I had zero scholarship opportunities at the Division I level at that point in time. And so we had a meeting with my coaches, and it was, you know, after basketball practice one night, and kind of said, okay, last-ditch effort, what can we do? And we kind of made a plan. And, you know, just remember coming home discouraged, kind of thinking, man, is this going to work out? You know, and we don't have a lot of time left. And it was later that night, I got a call from Bill Cubitt. And Bill Cubitt is currently the offensive coordinator at the University of Illinois, but he was the newly hired head coach at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo. And I built a relationship with him when he was at Stanford. So he came to see me my junior year when he was at Stanford, you know, wanted me to come out to camp and potentially be a part of their program with the academic rigor that was something that appealed to me. But it was too far from home and made that decision and moved our separate ways. But he came back in the picture and said, hey, you remember me? And here I am. I'm at Western Michigan University. We're trying to, you know, get going on our recruiting class, get a few staff hired, and I have a scholarship for you. And so it was this amazing unfolding of timing as well as that clarity. And it ended up being the only opportunity I received to play at the Division I level. And, you know, didn't really know what Kalamazoo, Michigan was or where it was. But I look back on that, and I look at God's hand in and of that all. And it brings a tear to your eye. It's just humbling to think about the fact that, you know, here something that wasn't even on the radar came into being and provided more opportunity than I ever could have dreamed of or imagined. It's allowed me opportunities in this community to, you know, do several different things to impact lives. And I met my wife, the love of my life here. And so it's amazing to think back on his providence through that whole process, through the highs and the lows of it.
Amen. You know, and we here in Michigan know all about Western Michigan. They're usually the small school that the Spartans beat up, you know, whenever they're on the calendar, and we kind of circle that for a W. But, you know, I think this is so awesome. Here you got a Division I scholarship offer. And you mentioned something that I think is very, very awesome, and I was kind of going to go in that direction, where prayer was a big part of your life and big part of this portion of your life. What did this do to your faith when all of this was taking place?
Yep. I'm going to take a little segue before that and say that the opening game of Western Michigan season is hosting Michigan State at Walda Stadium in Kalamazoo.
Yes.
So the Spartans are coming to Kalamazoo, and you and I might have to make a little wager on that. So I'm rowing the boat with Coach Fleck and the Broncos. But nonetheless, prayer is a – I'll be honest with you. Prayer is something that I would – the best way to say it is it doesn't come naturally to me. I tend to be a doer. I tend to be someone who wants to be active and busy and pursuing a goal at all times. I mean, I tend to be a bit of a workaholic. And so for me – To truly, as the psalmist would say, be still and know that I am God, it's hard for me. It's it's work. And I love reading the scriptures, and I'm better at that and sometimes more passionate about that than prayer. So admittedly, it's a work in my life that I'm working on and praying about praying. And I think, you know, one of the things that I've seen over and over is that there's power in it, and that it really brings people together, and it also is an intimacy with God that we can achieve that we can't any other way. So he speaks to us through his word, but we really can learn who he is through prayer. And so I think, for me, it's something I'm working on, admittedly, but it's played a key role in my life in a number of fronts. I think in athletics, to kind of more directly answer your question, I think prayer is misconstrued in athletics.
Yes.
I think a lot of times prayer is associated with favor and blessing. And so there's this thought, you know, we pray for wins and we pray for safety and different things rather than maybe praying for some of the things that align more with God's heart and character. Let us compete in a way today, Lord, that glorifies and honors your name. May other people see you in us by the way that we handle a bad call or adverse situations or different things.
Yeah.
And it's hard to model that in the moment when emotions are high and adrenaline's flowing and different things, but we've seen that it can be done, and we see people that do it time and again. I think of, Tony Dungy, or I think of, our head coach in Indianapolis, who's now in Detroit, Jim Caldwell.
Yeah.
These are men who are believers that exemplify that on the sideline. And you can see it in their calm and their poise, the way they conduct themselves and the way they treat their players. And we see examples that are not so in line with those values. But I think it's something that, is challenged a lot in athletics around, praying for success rather than some of the things that are in line with God's heart.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. And I completely concur. And I can remember doing it as a kid, and, this knowledge, this loose knowledge that I would say that I had, and going into a game and praying for the victory. And, that's one of the things we need to encourage our children. The Bible tells us, Deuteronomy 6, Ephesians 6, training their kids up in the way they should go. And I hope that testimonies like this can be heard by a parent that might be able to be shared with a student athlete so they can understand the importance and priority of God in their life, and that this is just a game. And even though we get into it, and like you say, how we hold ourselves during these competitions and the heat of the moment tells a lot about our character. And those are the things that we can be talking to God to help us with. And I think those are the things that are also honoring, God-honoring, and help us try to achieve that righteous plateau. Now, I want to talk more about college, or I'm never going to get through any the rest of these questions. Your freshman year, you throw 20 touchdowns, I think 3 interceptions, this in 2005, and I believe as a true freshman, you were like number 3 on the depth chart when the season started. And since I'm a stat guy, I've been scouring through. This has been so much fun for me. I've been scouring through Western Michigan statistics, and I found that your first game, I think, was against Buffalo. Is that correct, and why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, no, that is right. You're testing my memory a little bit here. But, it was an interesting circumstance my freshman year. I came in, battled as hard as I could. But we had 2 fifth-year seniors, and so I ended up 3rd behind them. With plans to, redshirt and save that year and play 4 later.
Yep.
And we had a situation where the starter broke his leg, and then I ended up, after another game, sharing some time rotating with the other fifth-year senior. And the Buffalo game, I didn't start, but I did play a little bit. And I don't remember a lot about it other than we won, to be honest with you. I think it was a home game, and remember, a couple touchdown passes, and it was a good chance to get my feet wet. And then, you know, the next week we played Ball State and had a 5-overtime game that we lost 60-57 and really, you know, got into the throes of it from there and started playing the rest of the season. But, you know, it was a fun year. It was a year of a big turnaround. Western was 1-11 the year before, and we came in and won 7 games and had a nice turnaround. And we had a couple talented guys, Tony Scheffler, who had a nice career in the NFL, just ended his career a couple years ago, and then Greg Jennings playing for the Vikings, who's still playing. And so it made it pretty easy when you had a couple guys like that that, you know, could either take you under your wing or make you look really good when you threw a bad ball. So had a lot of help and a lot of, you know, guidance and great coaches along the way. And, you know, faced some adversity later at the end of that year, but it was a good learning curve for sure, and something that I take with me.
Talk about the end of that year. I'm pretty sure you redshirted your sophomore year, I think due to an injury. Was this difficult to watch your team from the sidelines after having a very successful freshman season?
You know, it was incredibly difficult, and it was really a dark time that eventually led to, you know, coming to faith in Jesus Christ. And so for me, coming into that last game, you know, we were, I think at that point we had won 7 games. We're coming to the last game. If we won, we were going to go to the MAC championship in a bowl game. And we were on the road at Northern Illinois, and it was, you know, right before Thanksgiving, ESPN2 game, a lot of neat things going on. And early in that game, I kind of took a high-low shot, and I damaged my right knee pretty significantly. I tore my ACL, MCL, and PCL, kind of a three-ligament injury. And, you know, it was pretty devastating. It set me back for about 9 months in total. I had reconstructive surgery, lots and lots of rehab, still brace that knee to this day when I'm active. But it was a real trial in the sense that I realized that something that I had taken for granted could be taken away in an instant. And that this was not an opportunity or privilege to be taken lightly. And so it was really a time of searching. It was a time of uncertainty, a time of lots of hard work, a lot of pain. And being away from the game, I think, ultimately helped me. But at the time, it sent me into some struggle. And it really was an identity crisis in many ways when I thought about, you know, who am I really, and who do I want to become, and who am I as a leader? But you know, I'm better for it. And I think what ultimately I learned is that I had a real opportunity to show others, you know, my leadership abilities and earn more respect from people because of the way I handled an adverse situation, and to really be light and be an example in the midst of adversity because people are watching. So it was a real challenge. It was a hard lesson to learn being away from home when you're younger like that. Certainly something that I draw upon years later.
You know, as an athlete, injuries, they're just part of the deal. I mean, I've had my injuries, ankle sprains, later in life because of all the sports, had a lateral release done on the left knee, and you're right, rehab is awful on knee injuries. I mean, those are the worst injuries. I don't care. They're terrible. But learning what your body can and can't do is included in that mix when you're participating in athletics and things of that nature. But the beautiful thing about practicing our belief in Christ is that no matter the trial, He is always there, urging us on, encouraging our walk. Share your thoughts on this and persevering through our victory in Christ.
Yeah, and most definitely, it's a great question. I think, you know, the verses that I found a lot of comfort in during that season of life was Romans 5:3-5, which reminds us to rejoice in our sufferings because suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope, and hope in God does not disappoint us. And so those were verses that I really truly I took encouragement from, but I really truly went through that process of gaining character through perseverance, and as later I came to know Jesus. You know, finding that hope in Him. And it was a real struggle just because of the identity. And I think, you know, you mentioned idols earlier. An idol is revealed in our lives, in my opinion, when it's taken away. A lot of times we don't know what the idol is, but when it's taken away from us, we reveal it. And so I think for me, that was a revealing process of, you know, what I was pursuing more than what I should have been pursuing and what was first in my life. So a lot of times we experience that a hard way. An idol is revealed when it's taken from us. And, I think that I experienced that firsthand through, you know, football and that injury and not being able to play for a year.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go back into my own dungeon here of sports memories, because I played for, again, 4 years of high school football too, and I knew the last time that I took off my pads after our last game that I'd never put them on again. I knew that. I wasn't good enough to play at the next level. I didn't have any plans to, and that was tough. It was tough with that knowledge that I was going to have to take them off and sat there looking at them in the locker, and even though they are kind of a pain to put on, you know, I was going to miss it, and I still kind of do. Now, during the last game of your senior year, you get hurt before the game even really gets rolling. Was there a time of reflection that said, this might be it? You know, I'm not going to go on. This injury might do it for me. You know, I didn't get that final game I really wanted. Did those questions come into your mind?
You know, I think, honestly, I you know, I was a head football coach for 3 years after my career was done. And one of the things that I told, you know, we had a year that was a tough year. We didn't win as many games as we wanted to or we should have. And it was our seniors' last game. And, you know, I remember telling them before the game, guys, there aren't many times in your life where you know it's the last time you're going to do something. I mean, you think about, you know, an example would be a loved one we've lost, right? I mean, there are very few times where you know, yeah, you know, you would have said goodbye to them. You didn't know it was the last time you're going to see them. And then, you know, then you get the news and they're gone. And for me, I never really had that closure on my career. You know, I'd be with an NFL team at the end when I was playing professionally, and you get cut and then you get another call, and is this going to work out? Is it not? And then you get let go, and you kind of never knew when it was over, and ultimately kind of had to make that decision as a free agent of, you know, is this call ever going to come again? And there's something to be said in that world, you know, as I expressed to those seniors, that you know, for the most part, you know that this is the last time you're going to do something, and you have the ability to go after it with all your heart, all yeah, your energy, all your enthusiasm, and to really truly pursue it. And I think that's a message that's valuable for younger athletes and for the coaches that are coaching them at those lower levels, is that this is something that is not going to last forever. There's going to be life after athletics. You will be something else other than an athlete for more of your life than this time window. And how are you going to use that for the long term? But, you know, that closure you spoke of, as emotional as it was, I'm sure, at the end of your high school career, in many ways I wish I had that, because I never really knew when it was over until a year later when I looked back on it. And there's something to be said for when, you know this is the last time you're going to do something, and you can give it everything you possibly have that one last time. So definitely, you know, some fond memories of looking back upon those things.
Yeah. Well, I kind of wished I might have got hurt during that game, because we got blitzed 40-0. But, you know, I did have that going. I did know it was my last game. But, you know, that's how life goes sometimes. That's how games go. But your life isn't all football, Tim. You received a number of individual awards and accolades as a student athlete. My son, he's going into his senior year here coming up in college, and he's a 4.0 guy. But he has to work his tail off to get there. So here I am. I used to play different sports, and, you know, there's practice like crazy, and there's weight training and all these different things you have to do to get ready for these different sports. And then there's study. Now, my son doesn't do that. He is just straight up studying, and he does music, but it's hard, and it's hard work. Were you always grounded in studies based on the knowledge that very, very few play professionally?
Yeah, you know, for me, I mean, it was it really was driven out of this goal that whatever I took on, I wanted to be the best at it. And if I knew, you know, I didn't necessarily set out to achieve a certain GPA, but if I knew I could get an A in a class, why would I settle for anything less? You know, I think there's a mindset that can permeate sometimes where if I kind of push the limits, I say, well, I could do this well, I could perform to this high of a level, but this lower level is enough to get by. So I'll do a little bit more than that, and that'll be good enough. And for me, I struggle to sleep at night with that. And so for me, you know, having a certain GPA really wasn't the goal. It was more, all right, I know I can do this. I can get this A in this class. So why would I settle for anything less? And I think doing that over and over again is what created good habits and ultimately those different study skills. And I mean, I think that's the value of athletics, is that you learn very quickly that, you know, unless you are unbelievably talented, which is less than, you know, 0.1 of a percentage globally, I mean, you have to work hard to stay competitive, because there's always someone better, there's always someone younger, there's always someone coming after your job, and you got to protect that. And so you've got to work and stay ahead. And the same is true every day in our lives and our professional careers, in the business world, in education, medicine, whatever it is that we do, yeah. what the Lord has called us to. I mean, everything's evolving, changing, and if you're not willing to, you know, go the extra mile and work, you're going to get left behind. And so we've got to demand excellence of ourselves. And for me, it was just really taking that on-field mindset and applying it in the classroom and not settling for anything less than my best. But it didn't come without hard work. I mean, there were days where, you know, we'd have a lift at 6:30 in the morning. We'd have class all morning. You'd go to meetings, go to practice, have night class after dinner, go to study hall and get some more work in, and go to bed and get up and do it again. I mean, they were long days. And so, you know, you've got to have that willingness and that drive to understand what you want and to pursue that goal wholeheartedly and to the best of your abilities.
And that is the testimony that we're supposed to live in all of life, working hard, being diligent, understanding the gifts God gave us, and then going and doing it. And if we get lazy and pull back and say, yeah, I can settle for less, what does that say of our testimony to others, right? I mean, here we are to be a witness for Jesus Christ, and we don't give it, you know, our all. What does that say for those around us? So it's important. Well, I want to move on because we're getting short on time. NFL, your season's over in college. You want to move on, obviously. Did you participate in things like the NFL Combine?
I did. I was invited to the Combine, and there's, you know, 200-250 athletes, I believe, every year that are a part of that, and I was a part of that game, as well as one of the senior All-Star games, you know, the Combine is it's an interesting place. It's, you know, all the stories that people hear or write about or read about, they're probably all true. I mean, it's a very intense environment for about 4 days. You don't sleep much by design. You're tested physically to your limits by design. You're tested mentally to your limits by design. And it's really kind of this proving ground where you're in that world for 4 days and you're just fully tested. And, you know, it was a great opportunity. It was something that I'll always remember. You know, I think it was an opportunity, really, when I look back on it, to be a witness and be an example. I mean, they're going to put you in adverse situations to see how you respond. And I think that peace and poise comes from the Lord. And so it was an opportunity to try to really lean in on that when my own strength wasn't sufficient. And certainly a big test and something that we'll be seeing here on NFL Network before long in this season of 2015, but something that, you know, is, again, just a memory of that whole process.
What was your 40 time?
I believe it was in the 4.9s. I've never been blazing fast, but good enough. I just had to move around in a 5x5 box from the big guy.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Hey, you know, that's what I ran in high school, was 4.9. So what is it today?
Oh, it's if it's good enough to get to the weight room and lift a little bit, get up and down the basketball court, then that's good enough.
I was going to, you know, kind of move in. If you gave a number, I was going to say, hey, you know what, we'll get together during that Michigan State Western Michigan game, and then we'll have to do maybe a little 40-yard challenge before we go to the game just to, you know, get our juices flowing, but we won't do that because I'd lose. So it's draft day, NFL. Did you think you'd get a call?
You know, I did, and it didn't really pan out the way I had hoped. So I, you know, coming in, I knew I'd be either a late round or, you know, maybe undrafted guy, and it ended up that quarterbacks didn't really come off the board very quickly that year. That would have been the year that Tim Tebow was a late first round pick. I think I think Sam Bradford was probably the highest guy overall. I want to say Jimmy Clausen and maybe a couple other guys came off in the second round. But as it got late into the sixth and the seventh and things weren't moving, it was kind of, you know, that realization we talked about earlier of this could be over right now.
Yes.
And got 4 or 5 calls late in the seventh from 4 or 5 different teams. I think it was Miami Dolphins, the Saints, the Cincinnati Bengals, the Colts, and a couple others. And Indianapolis ended up being the right opportunity to join. And so made that decision. It was, you know, it was really a decision about opportunity, a decision to learn from, in my opinion, probably the greatest quarterback or one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. And it was less money than some of the other decisions, but it was the right one for me. And we loved living in Indianapolis. It was certainly a first-class organization under the direction of Coach Caldwell and some of the leaders there, like Bill Polian. And it was a great situation. I learned a ton. You know, unfortunately, it didn't work out for the long term, but have no regrets. It really was a great place for my wife and I to live and a great organization to be a part of.
You played in the top level that a person can play. Have you been able to reflect back on that, not only reflecting on, you know, this place that you were, but this platform that you had, and were you able to share the love of Christ through it?
Yeah, I was. And the only reason is because, again, of those people in my life that encouraged me to do that. You know, one person in particular that really pushed that forward in my life. You know, I came to Jesus Christ in 2007 through a Fellowship of Christian Athletes camp. And after that camp, I was kind of like, all right, what do I do with this? And one of the people that really challenged me and pushed me and gave me opportunities to speak publicly about my faith was our team chaplain, a guy named Randy Burnett, who's no longer with us. But Brother Randy, as he was known, was a pastor of 12th Street Baptist Church in Kalamazoo, and was our team chaplain, traveled with us on the road, led us in Thursday Bible study and Friday night service before the game on Saturday. And he was one of the first people that said, hey, come share your testimony in my church, and gave me the pulpit on a Sunday and just kind of threw me in there. And I didn't really realize at the time, but he saw a gift and he was encouraging me to use that platform. And so I've had multiple experiences even to this day where I had those opportunities, and it's really, you know, through God's grace and the different things he's given. And I'm just trying to be a good steward of those experiences. So I simply am using, you know, those gifts and talents and experiences, hopefully in a way that honors him and that can impact the lives of other people for his glory.
Very good, very good. Now, I got two more things I want to mention. Then I'm going to bring Cindy back in. If we go over just a couple minutes, that might happen. Listeners, just hang with us. You do a number of things today, including partnering with me and TheologyMix.com with a platform of your articles, all kinds of cool things. I talk about TheologyMix.com quite a bit since they've picked us up. The Snyder family is fantastic. Why don't you tell us about it? How did you get involved with it? And a little bit about the articles that you put out there.
Sure, yeah. You know, honestly, I wish I had more time to write more, to be perfectly honest. I think it's a neat forum. Honestly, it's amazing what social media can do when we use it for good. I simply happened to receive a message from John Snyder, who you just referenced,
yes,
and saying, hey, you know, here's what this is, and I've read some of your writing, and I think this could be a neat forum. Why don't you reach out and you know, speak with the team? And so that's really kind of where it started. And we worked a couple of things out, and here we are. And so it's really been pretty simple. I have, you know, my own website and blog that I manage, you know, as well as manage some of the speaking engagements I do. And it was just simply a byproduct of some of that, getting into John's hands, that led to Theology Mix. I think it's a neat forum that can touch more people and more a diversity of believers in different places of the world, as well as different life circumstances that I might not normally be able to touch. And so I'm grateful for that opportunity to share some messages periodically with the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are some great things in there. And there are some things that are everyday kind of deals. There are topics on deeper theology type thoughts written by, you know, different schools of thought. Lots of great comments are taking place. So, listeners, yeah, if you get a chance, go to TheologyMix.com. It's fantastic. And you can hear Speak Up there. And you can listen, read Tim Hiller's articles. And, listeners, by the way, TimHiller.com. TimHiller.com, we have a listener out there who might want to connect and have Tim come to your speaking event. Tim, why don't you share with the listeners what kind of things you talk about?
Yeah, most definitely. We'd be happy to connect with you through the site. The other website I would throw out is a business I co-own. It's called Next Level Performance. It's www.nlathlete, that's NL for Next Level Athlete.com. And basically, you know, the heart of the message that I share, regardless of faith-based or non-faith-based, is simple. It's that leadership is leadership through serving other people. And we had an opportunity earlier this week. I was at the Michigan Association of Student Councils over in Troy, Michigan, at Oakland University, and had the opportunity to share that, you know, leadership is really all about, it's about standing for something, it's about serving other people, and it's about supporting other people. And I believe that, you know, regardless of your faith background, that we can all agree on those principles, that the most impactful leaders are truly servants. And so that's really what I just simply try to share in every forum. It takes on different forms sometimes. A lot of times it's in front of student athletes, but you know, we're all here to serve and share our experiences to better the lives of others. So I'd be honored to meet some new folks.
Very good, very good. Well, let me bring back Cindy Sproles, who's been listening in the background. Cindy, what'd you think of the testimony brought to us by Tim and the kind of the trek that the Lord's brought him through and on?
Well, first of all, Tim, let me just say, every time we have somebody like you on the show, Scott wants to race him or arm wrestle with him or something. So,
well, Scott, we can.
I don't know why, but he wants to get in there and race with you. But no, I'm impressed, Tim. Thanks for being with us, and thanks for sharing that with me. I did have one question, and I've been in and out of the room, so I may not have. You may have answered this, and I may not have heard it. But when exactly did you become a Christian? Were you already in the NFL when that happened, or?
I was in college, and so it was. I had an opportunity coming out of a time when I was going through some searching and struggling, coming out of a severe injury that I had. That I had the opportunity to speak and be a huddle leader at a Fellowship of Christian Athletes camp that's held every year here at Albion College in Albion, Michigan.
Uh-huh.
And so I had the fortune of being there and mentoring student athletes. And where the Lord really got a hold of me was that first time, you know, I had been pursuing my football goals and dreams and passions purely for my own self-indulgence, right? For my own goals, for my own, you know, check the box and get further ahead on my path of what I wanted to accomplish. And for the first time, I really had my eyes awakened to the opportunity of that platform that Scott talked about that was before me to use football to impact the lives of other people. And so I was blessed to be saved by God's grace at that camp in 2007. And, have tried to since make that my mission to serve others through the platform of athletics.
So how did your teammates take that? Did you know?
Mm. That's a great question. You know, I think the thing when you talk about teammates will be your own worst critic because they know you better than anybody. And so the key is, especially in an athletic world, but this is life in general, that sometimes your actions are so loud no one can hear what you're saying. And I think true integrity in our faith walk is when our thoughts, our words, and our deeds all are in perfect alignment. And that's true righteousness, I believe, in what the Bible tells us. And so for me, it was about living in that alignment as much as possible of my words, the way I treated people, and what I said and did, all aligned with what I was claiming as my beliefs, whether publicly or privately. And so people should be able to see what we believe by the way we conduct ourselves, the way we speak, the way we treat others. They should say, there's something different about that man or woman, and what is it I want to know? And that's where we have that opportunity to share our faith. And so for me, it was really all about that alignment in front of my teammates and coaches.
Well, good. That's what I wanted to know, because you never really get that story. You know, when you hear these things, you either hear media saying, oh, you're a Christian, or you hear it the opposite way, and we never really know, you know, exactly how do your teammates respond to you. And you're exactly right. Your actions speak louder than your words. You don't have to shout it. You know, you don't have to scream Jesus. You just have to beam Jesus. You know, it just has to come out
That's
of
right.
you through your smile and through your actions and through your words. So congratulations, and I'm so glad you joined us. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, Tim, I do like to challenge. We had Frank Murphy on, and Cindy remembers Frank, and she probably remembers how this goes, too. I'm going to have to pull that up from the archive sometime, because he played for Tampa Bay, the Bucs, and a couple other teams as well, and he was a kickoff specialist. So at the end of the show, I promptly challenged him and said, how much of a head start do I need? And he chuckled, and he said, I'd probably have to spot you about 95 yards. So, yeah,
and, well, hey,
we would win.
We can race when the Spartans come to Kalamazoo. I'll be ready.
I will add to that when I saw that man, I could not believe the size of that man. I mean, I thought, oh, NFL player, he's probably just, you know, a regular guy. Oh, no, he was massive. He was big.
Yep. And I challenged Scott
wouldn't
Cousins.
Have had a chance.
I wouldn't have, and I challenged Kirk Cousins, too, when he was on the show and said, you know, you got 10 passes from 10 yards. You can throw bullets at me. I used to be a receiver. How many am I going to catch? And his answer shocked me, Tim. He said, all 10, because I'm going to throw a perfect spiral that's very catchable.
There you go. That's a great answer.
So, yeah, it was. And, yeah, I've done lots of challenges, but... Tim, it's been great having you. We'll have to have you come back on. I know you've got a book in the works, too. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I'm working with you know, you probably know these guys, Bill Carmichael and his family, part of Deep River Books. They're out on the West Coast and fortunate enough to have a partnership with them. And book is coming out in fall. It's a weekly devotional titled Strive. Your life is short, pursue what matters. And so I'm really going to challenge the reader to do that as kind of a weekly devotional format. So very excited.
Awesome, awesome. Well, get that thing going, and, you know, I need a copy. I'll endorse that bad boy. Then we'll bring you back on Speak Up, and we'll talk some more. How's that sound?
That sounds great. We'll get together this fall when it comes out.
Sounds well, and we'll get together for a race and watch Spartans play. So it's been great having you, Tim. Thank you for being with us tonight on Speak Up.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Take care.
And folks, like I say each and every week, you know, grab up your family, grab up the book that means something for all of us, the book that God gave to us, the Holy Word. So important that we teach our kids the precepts so that they can go through this life with power and encouragement in the name of who Christ is. Folks, we'll be here again next week. I hope you can join us, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. God bless you.